Hi, my name's Lee. I'm the front-end lead at Splice, which is a really exciting service that helps musicians collaborate and discover new sounds. So at the risk of wasting the most impressive material 2 minutes into my talk, or actually 20 seconds into my talk, I'm going to give a quick demo of a drum machine that I wrote that's written in Angular 2, if I can command tab or if my computer will do anything. Sweet. All right. Everyone see that okay? Yeah. Okay, so this is the NG808 Mark II. Mark I was written in Angular 1. I'm just going to let it run for a second so you can see what it sounds like. Yeah. All right, so as you see, it's a fully functional drum machine, has 11-ish tracks. I actually didn't count. It's got some visualizations. Lets you choose different patterns that are built in. Some planet rock. There are actually two planet rock sequences. There we go. A little bit, you know, kind of slower stuff here as well. It's got some other cool features. You can audition each one of the sounds right here by clicking in this little box. And the lower you click, the quieter it'll sound, and the higher you click, the louder it'll sound. You can choose a loop length for each one of the tracks. So say you wanted to do a shaker loop, and you wanted that to happen much more often. Say you didn't want to do this throughout the whole entire thing. You can just choose a loop length of 2, and it'll do that. It'll also give you a feedback in the ghost note areas as well, so it'll show you that, you know, this is actually happening over here. Right, anyway, cool. thank you. So, that was definitely the coolest part of the talk, so you can all just kind of talk amongst yourselves now. all right, so how does that work? So that's kind of a complicated question. The short answer is I yelled at the computer for like a week and a drum machine popped out. The rest of the talk is the medium long answer. You don't want to hear the long answer. So there are three main components to the NG808. The first is the web audio APIs. The second is Angular 2, that's the framework I wrote it in. And then the third, which relates a lot to Angular 2, is TypeScript. And I'll be talking a little bit in this talk about how TypeScript figures into Angular 2 and how it works. So everyone knows new APIs are fun, so I blocked out about 15 minutes for just reciting the call signatures for every single one of the web audio APIs. And then I gave the talk to a few people, and they're still asleep. So I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm just going to kind of explain at a high level how the APIs work. So the basic concept is pretty simple. Web Audio API lets you create an audio context. That's a context where all of your processing happens. And then you can add nodes to that context and then connect them together. So you see here we've got an audio buffer source node, but there are other ones. This one's for playing back samples. There's oscillator nodes, filters, analyzers, the whole lot. So this one, like I said, is for playing back sampled audio data. And then, let's see, we hook it up to a gain node. That's a node which would just turn the volume up and down. You can also connect that to a dynamics compressor node, and that will basically reduce the dynamic range of the sound so that you can turn up the volume while still keeping the same peak levels. And then in the end, you're going to want to wire it to the audio destination node, and that's the node that basically is connected to your web browser's audio output, and that ends up making it so you can hear the sound. So you do that and then play sound through the whole thing, your speakers vibrate, and your ears hear a noise. So one of the cool things about the signal graph with the web audio APIs is it doesn't just have to be linear. So every time you want to make a new connection, you don't have to go to Amazon and buy a cable. You don't have to, you know, solder inputs and outputs into the modules. So you can make the graph as simple or as complex as you want. You can make it totally linear, or you can have networks of graphs, or of nodes. So in this slide, you see an example where we've got an audio buffer and an oscillator both wired into a gain node. And then the gain node goes into a biquad filter node, and a filter is basically something that's going to let you take out spectral content of the audio, so either make it duller or brighter or do EQ. And then that's going into the audio destination node, so you'd hear the sound. But the gain node is also outputting to this analyzer node. And the analyzer node is basically going to give you information about the sound that you can then use to make visualizations or to do other transforms on the audio. So we'll talk about the analyzer a little bit, because that's basically what drives the visualizations for the drum machine that you just saw. So an analyzer will let you collect both volume and frequency information about the signal, and it'll provide it as a continuously changing array, just numbers. And then those can easily be used to, you know, process the audio or draw a representation on the canvas, which is what I was doing in NG808. And the actual code that does that isn't super interesting, so I'm not going to show it, but at the end of the talk, there's going to be a link to the MDN article that I basically cribbed like 80% of the code from. I did a little bit more work, but... So that signal graph I showed you a couple slides ago, this is what it might look like in code. I don't know if 100% of the call signatures are the same. We probably need to pass some arguments to things, or, you know, whatever. It's a presentation, man. So you see here we're, you know, creating the audio context, we're creating the each one of the nodes, the buffer source, oscillator, gain node, and then you just call the connect method with, you call, so source.connect, and then pass it the thing you want to connect it to, and that's going to wire all of them up. And then the final one here, you go filter.connect, context.destination, and that's going to wire that up to the audio output. One thing I also want to point out here is that analyzer node is spelled with an S, and if you're used to the American spelling, you may or may not waste tens of minutes throughout your development adventures with the Web Audio API figuring out what you spelled wrong. And as you see here, I also spelled analyzer, var analyzer, with a Z, which just makes it extra fun. So I recommend you stay consistent, and a compiled language with strong types might help with that. And so I'll get to that in a moment. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how the sequencing works in NG808. In the original version, I did a super naive implementation. I just used set timeout and ran it a bunch of times a second and scheduled new notes to be played. And that worked shockingly well. But the timing is only approximate, and if you want to precisely schedule audio events, that'll eventually let you down. If your system's under heavy load, or if there's a lot of stuff going on in the main thread of your web browser, rendering and what have you, because everything, you know, most of the stuff in the event loop in the browser happens on the main thread, so everything's going to block. And if you need notes to come in at the exact right time, not a good story. So for this new version of NG808, I'm using a library that we're developing at Splice. It's not open source yet, but we're hoping to get that to happen at some point. It's called Shabu Shabu, and that schedules events ahead of time to trigger at precise intervals. Let's see. Oh, slide already repeated my notes. Nice one, Lee. So, okay, so another disadvantage of using set timeout is that it's almost going to work, or it's going to work pretty well for really coarse events like notes or automation information, control information. But it's not going to work if you want sample accurate timing. So if you want to make your own synthesizer that has its own oscillators, and you need to basically manually create each sample, there's no way that you're going to be able to do that with the current APIs that are available to you in the web browser. But the timer that's provided by the Web Audio API was built with those kinds of uses in mind, so you can use it for any audio-related tasks, you can use it for extremely high sample rates, and the timer starts when your audio context is created, and then it runs with a whatever precision flow, which is like, you know, 57 bits or something that you get in a float in JavaScript, something crazy like that. I don't know why. Anyway. So basically, it gives you all the precision you need in order to be able to get sample accurate timing, even if you want like 192 kilohertz sampling rate. And the way that Shabu Shabu sequences things is that we basically pick a buffer size, say like 100 milliseconds in advance, and then we on set timeout, we run a function, and then that function will schedule all of the notes that need to happen in the next 100 milliseconds, but it'll schedule them to start with very precise start times. So the clock can drift backwards or forwards. Set timeout doesn't need to run at the exact time that you want it to run at. But the notes are still going to happen exactly when we want them to. Okay, so I just hand-waved about all the audio and the sequencing work, and so I'm going to hand-wave about some of the other parts of NG808. So quick show of hands, how many people here are Angular users? Okay. And how many people have checked out Angular 2? Not as many. Wild gesticulations. I'm curious because Angular 2 has been percolating for a while, and it's almost ready for production use, which means, of course, we're using it at Splice in production. Still in beta, there's still some pain points. We can make decisions like IE users, meh. A lot of sites can't do that, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend it if you need to target IE anything. Actually, works fine on Edge. And you know, there are a lot of articles on how to do certain things. A lot of them are outdated. If you need to do something, chances are you're going to need to port your favorite libraries to it. But it's still pretty cool. So I'm going to actually talk about some of the advantages that Angular 2 gives you. All right. So the first advantage is speed. And I talk about that because performance is such a shortcoming of Angular 1. So in Angular 1, all the data bindings were by default two-way, which means that any piece of dynamic data that you've got on the page, you have to synchronize it by watching both the DOM and also your data models for changes. So the more watchers you had, the more the performance overhead. And even when data bindings only need to be one way, you still get that performance overhead unless you explicitly say, hey, I want all of these to be one way. Don't put a watcher on it. So the speed advantage is why we started upgrading parts of Splice to Angular 2, even though it just entered beta. And there are some really performance critical parts of our app that we'd done backflips trying to get acceptable performance on. And they were extremely slow still on Angular 2, in Angular 1, no matter what we did. And the rendering speed in Angular 2, which defaults to one-way binding, is an order of magnitude faster, at least. So it made a huge difference to our end user experience. The second advantage is modularity. In contrast to Angular 1, where every view and controller is by default inherited from its parent scope, and you can access all the variables and functions that are defined in the parent, Angular 2 organizes its apps into isolated components, and each one of the components is going to be responsible for individual sections of the page, and it's only going to know about its own data and functionality, and it's pretty isolated. In the last couple of years, a lot of people have started writing Angular 1 apps in this way as well, but Angular 2 just makes it way more difficult to write things in the wrong way. Okay, so in my experience, the most polarizing aspect of Angular 2 is that the framework is written in TypeScript. And its patterns favor writing your applications in TypeScript as well. So what that means is that there's support for writing Angular 2 apps in ES5, ES6, TypeScript, and Dart. But the ergonomics of the framework are most tailored to certain features of TypeScript. So, how many people here have used TypeScript? Oh, okay, less than I thought. And of the people who are using it, how many for work? Okay, and then the rest are personal projects? I'm guessing. Because those are the only two things there are, right? So, I'm just asking because I honestly have no idea. I don't get out much, and I don't know like what the relative popularity is of TypeScript. But I know that there's kind of been an uptick in interest of it because the Angular 2 team decided to adopt it as the language that they're going to write their entire framework in. And Angular itself is pretty popular. So a quick overview, TypeScript is a language developed by Microsoft. It compiles down to either ES5 or ES6. And the language itself is a strict superset of ES6. And what that means is you can start out with valid ES6 or strict mode ES5. And that's going to compile just fine in TypeScript. But then you can start annotating your code and putting type information in. And the compiler is going to help you enforce rules. And it's going to yell at you when you do something bad with incompatible types. So, and obviously, unit tests are still essential in order to ensure the proper behavior of your code. But I found the compiler catches a lot of the simple errors that I'd otherwise need to write just really stupid bootstrap tests for. So I'm going to start out here with a simple example in ES6, like something that you'd run in your Chrome window if I was way more brave. Okay, so it's a simple function called add1, takes a number, adds one to it, returns a new larger number. So in plain JavaScript, as you may or may not be aware, there's some pretty crazy casting rules. And it would technically allow you to get away with passing a bunch of different types into this function, which would change the return type, and it would change the behavior pretty drastically as well. So if you passed a string in as I, you would get back the string I with the number 1 appended to it, because that makes sense. And that's probably not what you wanted. Probably. Might be. So the TypeScript version of this adds a simple type annotation to the I. You're just saying, hey, compiler, I is a number, because we talk to compilers. And the compiler is smart enough to know the entire expression now evaluates to a function that takes a number and returns another number. So I use Atom to do TypeScript. And in Atom, if I hover my mouse over this add1, it's going to come up with what's in this little comment here, which is function signature for a function that takes a number, returns another number. All right, so then I can use the function, and this is pretty cool. The compiler is going to know now, because it's got type inference, that the variable 3 is also a number, because it's taking the value of a function that returns a number. So I don't need to do any manual type annotation. I can if I want to, but I don't need to. So you can still write pretty terse code with it. And if I try any funny business, like try to assign tacos to 3, the compiler is going to get mad, and it's going to stay mad until I fix it. My build process is going to break. Roof's going to come down. It's going to be terrible. And if I try to do something else weird, like pass tacos to the add1 function, the compiler is going to be like, wait a minute, tacos doesn't look like a number, which is debatable depending on how much tequila you've had. It's still pretty cool. Okay, so TypeScript has a lot of other cool features too, and I totally have time to go over them right now, but Jeff was like, people need to come to iSalon tomorrow, and they need to go to work, and we can't stay until 4 a.m., so I'm going to kind of gloss over a lot of them. And I'm going to talk about how Angular 2 uses TypeScript and what a basic component looks like in Angular 2. As I mentioned before, Angular 2 apps are broken up into components, and each component that you write is a class that basically takes over functionality of one element on the page. And a component can create other subcomponents underneath it. So if you've already written some ES6, some of this should look familiar. So I'm going to kind of start with the stuff that's TypeScript specific. So we start out with an import statement, which just imports a component and input, which are basically two functions from Angular 2 core. And I should also mention that Angular 2, and a lot of stuff now actually, makes heavy use of module systems, so you're going to need to use something like System.js or Webpack. At Splice, we've been using Webpack, and I hate it, but I love it. And anyone who's used Webpack is probably going, It's kind of difficult to use, but once you bootstrap your entire application into it, it gives you a really nice module runtime and makes a lot of things like using npm modules and even Bower modules in your app a whole lot easier. So moving on from that, skipping over some of the weird, that at component thing for a second. So we're just defining a class called AwesomeButton. And button text here is an instance variable on the class. So every instance is going to have a slot for button text. And then we declare an instance method called onClick. And when that gets called, it just logs some text out to the console. All right, so coming back to the top here, we've got this weird at component syntax. And that's a decorator. And decorators were added to TypeScript in version 1.6, I believe. And the component decorator is basically going to let us add an annotation to the class, meaning that it attaches metadata to the actual class object. When the class gets created, it's an object just like almost everything else in JavaScript. And so behind the scenes, the compiler is going to write some code that basically transforms this whole clause into something that just shoves some information onto the class that other parts of the framework or other pieces of code can read back out and then do interesting things with. So basically what this is doing, we're giving it a selector saying every time the app encounters a tag awesome-button, we want it to attach this component to that element. And then we give it a template as well. And that's just a string literal here. We could have taken it from an external file, but it's pretty simple, so we just put it in line. And so when I put an awesome button on the page, I just wanted to replace it with a plain button. And there's a click handler here. That syntax with the parentheses is how you do event binding in Angular 2. So click, that's just a normal HTML, like a DOM browser event. And then when a user clicks the button, it's going to call that onClick method that we've got a little bit below. And then we've also got the little handlebar substitution, and that's just going to put button text, which is right down there below the input. It's going to put it right into our markup. All right, and then I'm just coming back to the input annotation, or not annotation, the decorator. So that's a property decorator instead of a class decorator. And when we use that, we're telling Angular that we want the button text property on the component to be bound to the value that we're passing into the component. And that's how we have access to it inside the template. And if that sounds convoluted, don't worry. Well, yeah, I don't know. Angular is kind of complicated, right? Like, everyone uses it and kind of agree it's sort of a little bit unnecessarily complicated sometimes. Yeah? All right. Got one person agreeing with me. Not bad. Okay, so this is what that would look like in a template. We've got awesome button on the page. And it's pretty straightforward. You'll notice that the button text attribute is in those funny little square braces. If you miss that, it won't work properly. That's the Angular 2 syntax for actually binding the click me into the value that we set in our component. And so what happens there is the template parser the template compiler will take that, and it'll take that button text and then bind it into that input that we just set. And then it'll transform that whole entire thing into the markup on the right here, which is button with click me in it. Perfectly reasonable, right? So back to the awesome drum machine that you remember before you were bored. By the way, the last 4 minutes is just going to be me like playing around with the drum machine. I've decided I'm not even going to take Q&A. So this is what the top level view looks like in the ng808. So there's some normal divs here, an h1 for SEO, and I've also got some components here. There's controls, the sequence selector, and the sequencer, and those all let me basically hide the complexity of each one of those parts of the app inside their own classes and write markup for them in a separate file. And behind the scenes, all of those are going to interact with a service in Angular parlance, which is basically just a, well, okay, in Angular 1, there were app-wide singletons. In Angular 2, they're hierarchical because there's a hierarchical dependency injector. Sorry. At any rate, there's an object that they all share that basically coordinates the communication with the library that was Shabu Shabu, the library that we're using to do all the sequencing. Then it basically describes the drum machine. Oh wow, I'm at the end. So that's a high-level overview of a bunch of random crap. Does anybody have any questions?
How do you debug Angular 2?
Okay, how do you debug anything, really? I was going to say, I personally debug it by putting debugger statements in and console.debug. I hear you're supposed to write tests, although my app is not bootstrapped in a test framework right now. I don't want to talk about it. I don't think there's anything equivalent to Angular Batarang and Angular 2 yet, which I guess means that your browser's more stable when you're running it. I don't know if anyone knows. Angular Batarang is a Chrome extension that, it ostensibly helps you debug Angular 1 apps, but it also crashes your browser and makes everything really slow, which is kind of difficult when you're trying to debug things. I don't know. But, is that like an okay answer?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yes. Oh, sorry. Well, I was looking there first. Okay, you're next. So I think the most complicated thing was that little oscilloscope, and I didn't really have to rewrite too much of that because that was just plain JavaScript. But are you talking about in Splice or in the drum machine?
In the drum machine.
Oh, in the drum machine? Yeah. I mean, the drum machine isn't particularly complicated, so I had to pretty much rewrite all the views, but it's just a matter of like translating syntax. And I think the bigger task was basically getting it to work with the different sequencing engine and not just my random do set timeout and then throw a bunch of notes up there. So that took longer than actually converting it to a different framework.
So I saw in one of your slides that it looked like you're writing, say, like custom HTML tags, like my awesome button, open HTML tag, my awesome button, close HTML tag.
Uh-huh.
Is Angular 2 use that, or were you writing pseudo?
Yeah, no, Angular 2 uses that, and Angular 1 uses that too. In Angular 1, they're called directives, and it basically lets you extend HTML, and so it takes that and then it'll replace it with whatever markup you want. But Angular 2 like really doubles down on that, and you're encouraged to do it a whole heck of a lot. Yeah, the attributes use the square brackets if you want to bind what's on the right side of the attribute into a value for the piece of code that's basically controlling that entire element.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, ish. Yes?
Is there a way to make TypeScript do type inference in the HTML part?
Oh, I wish. Yeah, so I've done I did kind of a spike on React before deciding to go with Angular 2, and that's one of the things I really like about React, because you're writing all of your markup in JavaScript. So you basically got all the advantage of, if you're using a compiled language like TypeScript with React, basically the compiler can tell you that your markup's invalid before you even look at it. With Angular, you actually have to run it. And then so in Angular 1, it would silently fail if you ran into literally any problem. It'd just be like, oh, yeah, well, don't worry about that, it's fine. Angular 2 will actually spit a bunch of errors onto your console, and you know something's wrong, which is better, but you still don't know, like, when you're in your editor, which I think would be really nice, but maybe someone will do it. I don't know. Someone smarter than me. Yes?
What browsers does the Web Audio API support? Is it just Firefox or Chrome?
I totally know the answer, but let's look on the internet. Is it .com?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Web Audio API. So this is just showing all recent browsers, right? So nope. Yep. Yeah, so good browsers. And outdated good browsers. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Is it pretty easy to work with the Web Audio API? I don't know if you have experience with
it. Yeah. Well, I guess. I mean, compared to what and for what purposes, I guess I'd say. I've only done pretty rudimentary stuff with it, I'd say. I think it's probably pretty amenable to writing higher-level APIs around it. You know, if you want to, I guess, not type as much or, you know, work at a different layer of abstraction. But, I mean, it's pretty tried and true, I guess, paradigm of, you know, having generators and processors that all plug into each other, you know. So it takes care of a lot of that low-level stuff for you. You're not, like, you know, shuffling buffers around, like, in C or anything. So that's kind of nice. You can. So those you can load like asynchronously from the file system, and then you'll basically just get them as buffers. And you know, I can't remember what the exact incantation is to load it into one of those audio source buffers, but I think you can basically just feed it like a UINT8 array, and then it'll magic it into place, and then you can just tell it to play, and it'll play. And you've also got control when you play it back over the speed of the playback and the pitch independently, I believe, and pan and a couple other parameters. And then using, I should have done a talk on this, using those nodes, you can, you know, do other transformations to it. You know, like you could use that gain node and, you know, hook some control into it to make like an envelope like you get in a synth or something. So, yeah. I don't think Chrome supports it. That sounds cool. I didn't even know that Firefox had that. That sounds useful. I saw a project that someone had done a couple of years ago that I think just, you know, it was just a regular web app that let you kind of explore the API using that, but it wasn't a built-in or anything. Yes?
Can you tell us more about the results in your spike with React? I want to know, why did you decide one or the other?
So we liked React, but it's a library for drawing views, and it sort of stays silent on how you're supposed to structure the whole rest of the app. You know, you've seen like that, you know, how to draw an owl, and it's like, you know, draw two circles, and then, you know, draw the rest of the owl. React is like the two circles, and then there are a lot of ways to draw the rest of the owl, and we already have a really complex Angular 1 app. And so, I mean, that was kind of the path of least resistance already, and it kind of hinged on whether Angular 2's rendering performance was enough, was basically good enough, or, you know, with enough parity to React to warrant, you know, moving to that just for performance reasons. And it looks like it actually is. Like, they're pretty similar, and you can do some tweaks to it that'll make it even better than it is right out of the box. Like, you know, tell it to only update, you know, when certain things happen. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yes.
You said you can control the pitch. How soon until you make like a Serato version of this NG808?
Like next week? Is that like, what's your schedule like?
That's like the first thing I thought of. Yeah. You control the pitch. Like, oh my gosh, you could actually create like a DMA line.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think someone has done that, like something like that, like a little, you know, like mock DVS thing in their in the browser. I don't know how good the, you know, shifting algorithms are. I think the Web Audio APIs are probably flexible enough where you could write your own, you know, module that'll basically do that. Probably need to get really good at phase vocoding and other things that I only half know what they do or what they are, but, you know, make me sound smart when I'm up here. So.
I think my question is related, but did you say somewhere that there was a scope of collaboration between musicians using this?
Yeah. So Splice lets you basically, if you're running a couple of different programs, Ableton, Logic Pro, GarageBand, or FL Studio, We've got a client that runs on your computer, and it'll synchronize all the projects that you save on your computer up to our service. And then it'll kind of do some munging to the files and rewrite paths, for instance, you know, if your project is referencing samples on disk, for instance. So you can add collaborators to it. Say you've got a friend, you know, living across the city or across the world, doesn't really matter. They can open that project on their machine, and it'll download the project and all of its dependent files onto their machine. They're able to work on it and save it, and you can kind of ping pong back and forth. So the way that we describe it to crowds like this is it's like GitHub for music.
I was hoping more of like real-time collaboration.
That's, yeah, a few people have tried that, and I think it's a really cool idea, kind of fraught with peril. You kind of need to, you know, have a really integrated system. You need to solve a lot of really hard problems, both with, you know, the infrastructure and also interaction models, I think, in order to do that. But you should try it. Okay. Good? You want me to just play with the drum machine a little bit? No. All right. Live performance. All right. And I have a two-step beat on here, but shuffle doesn't work in this version. Here, hang on. I can show you the original one. There we go. It should look identical. This is the Mark I. Almost identical. There's a drum and bass one in here. There we go, some Craig David. Anyone remember him? All right, well. Okay, thank you very much.